always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon and welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, the Monday edition, Monday, June the 3rd, 2024. Thanks for joining us once again, as always, at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Perhaps you're watching us on one of our many different streaming feeds. Yes, we have a ton of them. Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and NewsTalkSTL.com. Also available on smart speakers, and maybe the best, easiest, and most fun way to listen, because it is so much fun. Download that app. Your telephone is your radio these days, all y'all. All you got to do is go to the iPhone or the Android store, download the NewsTalkSTL app. You may listen to us on your phone, or you can Bluetooth that phone to any speaker system pretty much on the planet, and you can listen to us anywhere around the globe. So thanks for being with us this afternoon. Happy Monday. Welcome to the People's Republic of America, Stan, as I've been saying. You all probably woke up this morning. The sun rose in the east. The sky was blue. The birds and the cicadas were singing. And, yeah, Trump was convicted last week. And what did we all do? We all had a collective, okay, so what? So there's that. What is the left going to do now? Did you notice that? Did you notice how they had their big, look, as I explained last week, the jury instructions almost guaranteed a conviction of Donald Trump. I'm not going to necessarily fault the jury, but I am going to fault this judge, who is an in-the-tank, liberal, Biden supporter, leftist. The lead prosecutor on the, like, Mershon and the lead prosecutor, Colangelo, I think that's his name, I always screw it up, they were basically in cahoots. They might as well have been the law firm of Mershon and Colangelo, right? Because they basically, well, what was one of the favorite words of the left back when, Donald Trump first ran for office, or was first in office? That would have been collusion. Yeah. So, yeah, Colangelo. I got it. No, I think that's right. Yeah, I got it right. Yeah, Colangelo. Did you know that Mike Colangelo is also an American baseball player? I didn't know that. I just Googled the name and it both came up. Oh, that's Mike Colangelo. Matthew Colangelo. So Matthew Colangelo was the Manhattan prosecutor who came, who was basically dispatched. He was like banished for, but voluntarily, happily. He was the number three guy at the Department of Justice. And they basically, you know, banished is the wrong word. They basically cloaked him as a mercenary and they sent him into the wilderness. And that wilderness was lower Manhattan. And that's where he tried the case against Donald Trump. This whole thing was orchestrated from the beginning. We all knew, I think we were kind of hoping against hope that there would be one holdout on that jury that said, I don't care what these instructions say. I don't care how much Mershon put his, forget about his finger. He put both fists. You know what? He sat on the case. That's how much that he tried to influence it. I'm still going to hold out. Well, that didn't happen. And so now we can call this what it was from the very beginning. And that was a complete rigged hoax witch hunt. That's exactly what it was. Will it get reversed on appeal? I don't know. Are all the New York courts as crazy as the one in Lower Manhattan run by Mershon? Perhaps, probably, but maybe cooler heads will prevail. Will this go to the Supreme Court, which I think it would definitely get reversed? It might. Is Donald Trump going to go to jail? Very possibly he will receive a jail sentence. You know, I've never said no. He shouldn't. And based on this crime, which never would be persecuted and prosecuted against anyone else on the planet, he shouldn't go. The sentencing guidelines would nearly demand a slap on the wrist, probation, at the very most, maybe a brief period of limited house arrest. Maybe you got to wear an ankle bracelet for a while and be monitored. It's an E-class felony of a business records violation that I do not believe has ever been prosecuted against any other individual or business in the state of New York's history. So, all that being said, oh, and Donald Trump he's 77 years old. He's a first-time offender with a completely clean record, not a flight risk. He's actually running for president of the United States, and is the leading candidate, even over Joe Biden. Yeah. So in a normal world, with a normal judge, and a normal judicial system that we're accustomed to in the United States of America, Donald Trump would not receive a prison sentence. But this judge obviously has it out for Trump. He has it out for all Republicans. I'm sorry to say, they're coming for you and me and all of us next, because they've shown that they can do this, that they can turn our judicial system truly into a banana republic. So that's where, but we all got up this morning, right? And we all looked back on last week and we said, all right, well, now what's the left going to do? They don't have any more court cases. The other cases have been continued, and that's what we say in legal words. We say continued. They've been delayed in normal people's talk. They've been delayed to an unknown date into the future, most likely after the November general. So now what are they going to do? Folks, look back at the last few weeks of coverage. What have they been covering? They haven't been covering Joe Biden's failure as a president. They haven't been covering the Biden border crisis. They haven't been covering Bidenflation. They haven't been covering the fact that the GDP numbers for the last quarter were revised downward once again to about 1.3%. Now we're looking at Obama numbers now, right? Remember the new normal that Obama predicted when he was president, that we would never see 3% growth again? Well, until Donald Trump came into office. So we haven't seen any of that or heard any of that. And the media hasn't been focused on that because it's been get Trump, get Trump, get Trump. Okay, well, they got Trump. Fine. As we all knew, they probably would, with a Manhattan jury on a totally manufactured, orchestrated case. So now what are they going to do? Are they going to go back to talking about the real world and reality and the fact that this Biden presidency has crushed the American middle class? I mean, what are they going to run on? If they can't, quote, get Trump, I mean, yeah, they've got the sentencing hearing coming up in July, and that'll be another week of insane, hysterical pearl clutching. But until we get to that point, what are they going to do for the next few weeks? They're going to have to shift gears and talk about what's happening in the country and around the world, which is absolutely on fire and in chaos and crisis because of one, Joe Biden. How about the Hunter Biden trial? Hey, we finally have a member of the Biden criminal crime cartel who is actually being properly prosecuted in a court of law. Are they going to have nonstop 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, breathless coverage of that? Most likely not. But did you guys know that? Did you guys and ladies know that? Hunter Biden is under trial right now for felonies, for gun felonies, not misdemeanor business records violations, felony gun violations. I thought that's something that the left cared about. All right, let me catch my breath here. Welcome, everybody, to Monday. I am here. You haven't heard Chris Arps because he's not in studio today. He is on assignment. As producer Joey V says, he's on that USS assignment ship, right? He's on the assignment.
Exactly. Right? I saw some pictures of whatever he was doing this weekend. He was at some sort of gun shoot. It was called a shoot nanny, and I just like that.
He was at a shoot nanny?
I like a pun like that. That's a good pun.
I like that a lot. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So Chris Arps is not here, but I'm here, and Joey V is here. Joey, how was your weekend? How did things go for you?
Wonderful. We actually watched a bunch of DVDs, and one that I'd never seen before, Steven Spielberg's first film, Duel, is incredible. It's 90 minutes. It's so tight. It's about a semi-truck that's trying to murder a guy, and you never see who the driver is. Just running him off the road, pushing him into railroad tracks.
Wow.
It was supposed to be a TV movie, but it was so good, they went back and shot some stuff to get it up to 90 minutes so it could be in film festivals. But I would highly recommend Duel from that young guy, Steven Spielberg. He's got a future.
What time? What date did that? Was that? Is that
1971?
The year of my birth. Joey.
Oh yeah,
1971. Well, I'll have to go back.
Young 24-year-old Steven Spielberg made a movie in 13 days. And it was incredible. All on location, all real stunts. Mm-hmm. You just missed that, basically. You don't get real stunts anymore like this.
I wonder if we knew back then he was a prodigy.
I think so. I mean, he did one episode of TV of Columbo, and then he got to do this TV of the week, and then, you know, went on to fame and fortune. Close Encounters, Jaws was soon after that.
Fantastic. Well, that is excellent. I will we'll have to maybe check that out. And you've inspired me. I went back and I've been monitoring the reviews that have been coming in on Furiosa, the latest in the Mad Max saga. And the reviews are, despite the fact that the movie is very different than its predecessors, the reviews have been pretty decent. So I think, Joey, if you prepare yourself for what you and I have been talking about, that this movie is more talking and explaining and less action, that maybe people like the story. Maybe it's a decent enough thing that people have received it well.
Yeah, you don't really want to watch Fury Road right before this because the pacing is so much slower. It may get you in the wrong head state. And it actually is a prequel, and it leads directly into, it's like as soon as the movie ends, that's where Fury Road picks up. So maybe watch Fury Road afterwards is what I'm recommending. Oh,
okay, so kind of like the setup, and then you get all the action, kind of like Dune 1 and 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Dune 2, by the way, Joey, now available on Max.
Have you gone back and watched it yet? I know we got a little sleepy because it's very long.
I did.
Weren't really ready. I need to go back and watch maybe that last hour just to see if I feel the same about it. I bet I'd like it more.
I did the same thing you did. I put it on way too late in the evening, and after the first half hour or so, I was out. Not because I don't like the movie. I thought the movie was great. It's just I got to watch things earlier than 10 o'clock at night. Otherwise, I'm in La La Land.
So. We thank our overlords over at the Warner Brothers Discovery HQ for letting us watch Dune 2 for free.
Mm-hmm. It is fantastic. All right, we got a big show for you here today. In addition to all of the fallout, so to speak, of the we watched that over the weekend. We watched Fallout, Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay. I was thinking you were going to say the TV series, but yeah, the movie Fallout.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. One of the most excellent episodes and all that. Okay, so speaking of the fallout of the Trump trial, we'll, of course, continue to digest that. In fact, I will ask, even though Jim Talent usually comes on to talk about international affairs, border security, and all that, I will ask Jim, because I think you all know this, he's a recovering attorney like I am. Not only am I a recovering attorney, I'm a recovering prosecuting attorney. My first career was as a prosecuting attorney in the state of New York. I'm from here, grew up here, and make my home here, but I spent nearly 10 years of my life getting my education up on the East Coast. I went to Fordham University, St. John's Law School, and I then practiced law for my first 2 years as in, they called them assistant district attorneys is what they were called, what prosecutors are called on the East Coast. And I was an assistant district attorney under Dennis Dillon, who was one of the longest serving elected prosecuting attorneys in the country at the time. I believe he has gone before us to the great beyond now. May he rest in peace. But and honestly, I can't remember if he was a conservative Democrat or a Republican. He may have been both at some point in his life, but he served for like decades and ran a really tight ship in Nassau County, which is the first major suburb right outside the five boroughs. I mean, it's on Long Island. So you have Queens, one of the five boroughs, and then Queens has its entire border with the county of Nassau. So it's kind of like St. Louis City, St. Louis County, right? So I was right there in Nassau County, and I'll tell you, I bet a lot of my colleagues who work with me in the prosecutor's office are also shaking their heads about what's happened, because the DA's office, the district attorney's office in Manhattan, used to be one of the crown jewels of the country. There was a famous prosecuting attorney there, a district attorney, who had served forever up there. He was a Democrat, but he was a very law and order, old school conservative Democrat. I believe his last name was Morgenthau. He was the inspiration for the first district attorney in the famous show Law and Order, the original Law and Order, which I thought had an excellent cast. I love the writing on that show. I used to watch it all the time. And then I stopped watching legal shows because I kind of felt, as a lawyer, as I was into my getting in my later years, I was like watching my daily life over and over again. But that first cast of characters of the original Law and Order was excellent. And they filmed a lot of those scenes. If you remember, the courtroom scenes in the original Law and Order were gorgeous. And I can tell you where that was shot. It was shot in what's called the Surrogates Court in Lower Manhattan. Beautiful building, marble and 24 karat gold, you know, and all that. And old school, probably built like in the early to mid 1800s, and just a beautiful place. And that's where they shot a lot of the courtrooms. Surrogates Court is probate court, another word for probate court. So, you know, probate courts are generally little sleepier places. So I guess they had a spare courtroom here and there to film those scenes. But excellent. So what was I? Oh yeah, Morgenthau. So Morgenthau is probably rolling in his grave, seeing what Alvin Bragg, Soros-funded leftist prosecutor Alvin Bragg, has done to his once mighty office. I mean, it's kind of like Kim Gardner coming in here to St. Louis. You know, very, 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 very complimentary analogy there. So anyway, we'll talk to Jim Talent about all of those issues. And of course, we're going to get into some of the big international news of the day. There is new news on Joe Biden's broken border. I heard Tony and Katie talking about this earlier with Mark Lauder, that, you know, the conservative estimate. And you know what? I got to give Ken Williams credit this. Ken said months ago that the number was well north of 10 million and he thinks approaching 20. Well, finally, we're saying 12, conservative estimate is that 12 million illegal aliens have entered this country. And Mark Lauder put it in perspective. He said 12 million illegal aliens in the last 3 years. Between like, for like the previous 60 years, it was 12 million in total of legal immigrants. It's an unsustainable flow of humanity. It's nothing against where these people come from, who they are. We love immigrants in this country. I'm a product of legal immigration. I wouldn't be here but for it. But it can't be with a system that just overwhelms all of the institutions of the country. And you know what? You got to wonder, is that the design of the left? Number one, of course, they're trying to import voters. But I'm telling you, Hispanic American voters, once they get here and settle in and figure out like the political landscape after a few years, they tend to then vote Republican because they realize the Democrats are the insane party. But you forget about the political. What about the humanitarian and the drug traffic and the sex trafficking and everything else? So we're going to talk about that with Jim Talent. And did Joe Biden screw up something else with Russia and Ukraine? There was a decision that the White House is saying that they made in lightning fast speed that took them 17 days. Yeah, once again, this is the administration that has at their head a guy who's gotten every foreign policy decision wrong his entire career. Don't take my word for it. Take Bob Gates's word for it, a former defense secretary under both Obama and George W. Bush. 4:45, we got a very special announcement, an update on the 3rd congressional district race, which will be decided in our state in August. You're like, well, wait a minute, Tim. I thought the elections were on November. Well, yeah, they are, but that's the general. We're a pretty red state. Our elections, by and large, are going to be decided in August. So if you're not figuring out at this point in June who you're voting for in August, you need to listen up, listen very closely, because we're going to be unpacking a lot of that as we head toward the Tuesday, August the 6th primary, 64 days away. Bob Onder has an update on that 3rd congressional district. We'll also ask Bob about Tony Fauci's testimony before the U.S. Congress today. Speaker stumped you at 507. Joey, I was inspired by Todd Showalter and his email.
I mean, he's a genius. That makes sense.
Or did you write it?
It depends. I don't know what you're talking about. Is it the poop balloons in Korea? Because that could have been me.
Maybe that was a hot take then.
On the Right Mind show last Saturday.
Yes. Inspired by Todd Showalter and his trusty sidekick, producer Joey V. We'll dissect the speaker's stump speech then at 5:07. Susie Moore at 5:25. And we'll wrap things up, prepare for Larry Connors USA at 5:45. That is the Tim Jones and Chris Harp show for today. Jam-packed indeed. Buckle up, buttercup. It's going to be a wild ride here on a very manic Monday. We'll be back with Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator, chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council, next, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
North Korea sent around 600 more trash balloons into South Korea last night. South Korean military were seen collecting the balloons from an apartment complex. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff says North Korea has been flying these balloons towards the South since Tuesday. They're filled with manure, cigarette butts, and used batteries. Some of the balloons were found with timers, suggesting they were designed to pop those bags of trash in midair.
Just when you thought things couldn't get worse around the planet, they did. Well, that's Joe Biden's America 2024 and beyond, that's for sure. Let's bring in our next guest who can help us possibly make some sense of this mad, mad world.
Former U.S. Senator Jim Talent and chairman of the Reagan Institute.
I'm watching this and just wondering, you know, who's running the show.
This Jim Talent segment is brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri.
Senator, happy Monday afternoon. Chris is on assignment right now for a couple days. He says hello and gives his best. So Joey and I are going to take good care of you here today in his absence. Senator, what gives with Joey and I were calling these poop balloons during the break? You know, is this something that's been going on for forever and ever and we just haven't heard about it or we've forgotten about it? And what in the world a kind of point is North Korea trying to make here? Or are they just being annoying?
Well, I heard that there was manure in some of them. I didn't know that they had enough cows in North Korea to produce the manure. You know, it's I would put the possible explanations in two buckets. The first is Kim Jong-un runs the country, and he's a nut. And so this could simply have been a crazy idea out of him. The other, if you want to think of it more rationally, is sending all these balloons forces the South Korean military to scramble. You don't know what's in the balloons, right? And so there is a tendency to try and exhaust defenses, or, you know, this time it's trash. Maybe the next time it's something lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And On the other, so what you need is a menu of options, not just to defend against this kind of thing, but to impose costs and consequences on the North Korean regime. Now, I understand the South Koreans are going to start broadcasting from speakers along the DMV and telling, you know, very loud truths about the North Korean regime, and that's one good response. I think cyber is a very appropriate tool in instances like this, but you have to impose costs on them so that the next time they think, yeah, you know, it might not be worth it.
Senator, meanwhile, we have now returned. Well, let me ask you first about the thing that did get in the way of, like, everything else going on in the world, and that was this Trump trial that finally ended on last Thursday with the conviction. And, you know, Senator, I was saying, you know, as disappointed as we all were, especially those of us, like, you know, I'm sure you were, you and I, as members of the bar, to see our criminal justice system so used and abused in this fashion to go after a political opponent. I don't know that any of us were that surprised by the verdict, given the way the judge put his fist on the scales and the jury instructions that were so tailored towards a conviction. And we woke up today and, you know, the world has gone on and the Biden administration hasn't made the world any better. So, Senator, I guess my question for you is, as distracting and utterly horrifically disappointing that was, the Biden administration now wakes up here on a Monday morning and they've still got all the problems that they had before this trial started, right? And I don't think things have gotten better for them.
Yeah, it was a travesty. And it's the kind of thing you have to be disciplined when you talk about it, because otherwise the anger begins to surge up. And not for Trump, although it's a real injustice to him. But if anybody can bear it, right, it's Trump. And I think and believe he's going to have the last laugh in November anyway. But they seem to be bent on destroying the credibility of American institutions. And so, and this is an example, to have prosecuted him at all for this, under the circumstances where he was the candidate of the opposing party, would have been a mistake. I mean, even if they had something, so a business records misdemeanor on him, and they could prove it in a fair way, which by the way, I don't think they did. I don't even think they proved the misdemeanor, Tim. Mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. what you think. Mm-hmm. I don't think they proved that the records were falsified, mm-hmm. and I don't think they proved that Trump was responsible for how the records were structured. So I don't even think they proved the misdemeanor. But even if they could, you wouldn't do it. But to do this in so blatantly, obviously, and proudly a partisan, it's a travesty. Now, I agree with you. I think I'm beginning to think it has helped the Trump campaign. Certainly, it's helped them raise money. I would caution all of us who want Donald Trump to win that the main issues are the ones that you mentioned. What Biden has done to the country with inflation and allowing in, I mean, we don't really know how many illegals, 12 million, and with crime. And that's what I think most voters are going to be concerned about. So we want to be careful about not using our bandwidth too much on this, because I just don't know how many votes it's going to shift one way or another. But it's terrible, Tim. It really is terrible. And I like to think that many people in the Democratic Party believe so as well. In fact, I've read some of them on social media. It was a bad thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A dirtier day's work this guy Bragg has never done. And that's saying something.
Yep. Senator, I agree with you. There's been plenty of liberal commentators who have said the exact same thing. You know, just because you can bring a case doesn't mean you should. And there's been plenty of liberals that have said, including Dan Abrams, the senior legal advisor for ABC News. He said this weekend he doesn't think the case should have been brought. Senator, there was a statement made by John Kirby over the weekend that I want to play here in just a second. It's short. It's 25 seconds. And it reminded me of two other stories I wanted then to ask you about. There was a development regarding the Israeli conflict with Hamas in Gaza. And then there was another development regarding the Russia-Ukraine war. So here's what Kirby said. This kind of sets the stage for kind of the laughability of the Biden administration around all this.
Let me ask you about Ukraine. President reversed his previous position and granted Ukraine permission to strike inside Russia with U.S. weapons. What prompted the switch, and are you worried that it's going to draw the U.S. into a direct conflict? That was the president's concern before.
We've been concerned about escalation since the very beginning of this war, and those concerns remain valid. The president has said he does not want to be responsible for starting World War III. We are not looking for a conflict with Russia, another nuclear-armed power.
Well, despite what they say, Senator, it seems like World War III is happening all around them because of the miscalculations and the mistakes that Joe Biden has made, from the Afghanistan evacuation through the latest conflict in Israel and Gaza and everything in between. Senator, our good friends at National Review said, in a headline that sounds like something from the Babylon Bee, the Washington Post informs us that the Biden team hails with lightning speed the call for strikes in Russia. Meanwhile, Kharkiv burned. The Biden's team idea of lightning speed to make a life and death decision is apparently 17 days. So, Senator, whether or not you approve or disapprove of everything that the United States has done in regards to Russia, Ukraine over the last, on nearly 3 years now, everything Biden does in regards to this conflict seems to be wrong, a miscalculation, too late, not enough. Doesn't that seem to be true, especially with this latest decision?
Yeah. I mean, no matter what you believe about the basic policy in Ukraine, you cannot be satisfied with how Biden has conducted himself. I mean, he's neither stayed out of it nor intervened effectively in it. And I've been saying, as a person who thought we should intervene, and I wrote two columns about it, but this is ridiculous what he's done. And they offer no reason. In other words, Tim, 2 weeks ago, we couldn't allow Ukraine to strike Russia because of the fear of escalation. Now we can. Mm-hmm. So what's changed?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's changed, which means one of those two decisions must be wrong, right? And they offered this, and they don't seem to have any sense of that incongruity. I mean, if you had done that or I had done that, we would be meeting with our press people saying, well, how are we going to explain this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got to have some reason for changing my mind, right? Did you ever have conversations like that?
Plenty. Or,
you know, press people, sure. You say, well, you know, I change. And I would hope with you, and certainly, I know with me, that if I changed my mind, I had a reason for it, and I gave it, right? And so, well, here's what's changed. So, I mean, I've got a column coming up in National Review tomorrow because I was so frustrated with how he's handled Iran. I had to write it. I just couldn't restrain myself. And I'll just say another thing. I don't want World War III either. You know what's going to get us World War III? Is this purposeless meandering back and forth, this weakness, this accommodation and appeasement of our adversaries, this fair weather friendship for the countries that are supposed to be our partners. What did Trump used to say? And he certainly wasn't the first one to say it. Peace through what?
Strength.
Strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point of it. It's a point of being strong, of having strong tools of power, of using them judiciously when you're attacked, is to prevent conflicts from growing. And we're seeing them. We have the biggest war in Europe since World War II, the biggest war in the Middle East since 1973. And yes, I think you can lay that at Biden's door. I really do. And we're going to have one over Taiwan if this guy gets reelected.
Yeah. Senator, I think you've just coined the phrase that defines the Biden international foreign policy doctrine, purposeless meandering. I think that sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have time for one more question regarding that. The corollary to the Russia-Ukraine issue, of course, you just mentioned the other part of the world, Iran, the Middle East, Israel, Gaza. I saw a headline, and Senator, I don't know if you know much more about the details than I do, because I literally just saw the headline where there has been a proposed ceasefire deal that Israel seems to be kind of being forced into, and Netanyahu's response was, we're probably grudgingly going to proceed, but we don't like it because it's not a good deal. Can you further expound on that?
Well, Netanyahu has also said that they're not going to agree to anything that requires them to give up their war aims. So they're going to finish in Rafah.
Mm-hmm.
And what Hamas has said is, they're perfectly willing to engage with Israel, but not if it means giving up their maximalist demands, which is Israel out of Gaza, Israel rebuilding Gaza, They're not giving back the hostages. I mean, so I don't know what this is, but if it's anything substantive, I can't see these parties coming to an agreement, because Israel has to defend itself. They have to restore deterrence. They have to destroy Hamas's capacity to attack them. And Hamas, unless Hamas believes that it's going under, in other words, unless they believe that the alternative is complete and utter destruction, they're not going to agree to anything. Mm-hmm. Which is why, by the way, it would have made sense from the beginning to support Israel and make clear to Hamas that we were going to help Israel destroy them. Then we might actually have gotten an agreement that was legitimately acceptable to Israel. To Israel. Again, a strong approach, a decisive, purposeful, and consistent policy can produce good results. But what we've had, I mean, the business with a peer last week, breaking up.
Yes.
That's a symbol. That's a symbol of Biden's policy in the Middle East. Builds a peer nobody wants. 3/4 of the aid gets looted, which anybody could have told him was going to happen, right? Americans get injured in it. Thank heavens they weren't shot, but I mean, they were injured in building it, and then the whole thing breaks up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm. Yes.
It's Jimmy Carter and the rescue attempt of the hostages all over again.
Yep. How symbolic of the entire administration. Well, Senator, we'll look forward to that article in National Review coming out. We'll definitely be able to speak with you about that next week. Senator Jim Talent, of course, former U.S. Senator, chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council, at Jim Talent on Twitter X. Senator, thank you so much for the time. It's always great to speak with you.
Always good to talk with you and Joey.
Yeah, very good indeed. There he goes, Senator Jim Talent, and producer Joey V with a shout out.
Oh my gosh, he knows my name. This is incredible.
Save that, clip that, Joey, and you can use that on your calling card. All right, Joey and I can take a quick break here, 4:43. We got a very special announcement coming up regarding the 3rd Congressional District race. Yes, we're sending a new member to Congress. It's an open seat because Blaine Luchtmeyer is retiring at the end of the year. Former Senator Bob Onder is one of the candidates in that race. He has an update for this. And he has some reflections, I'm sure, on Fauci the fraud fibbing to Congress, as he always does. That happened today as well. We'll unpack all of it on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9 94.1 Newstalk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.
This morning, Dr. Anthony Fauci is set to publicly testify on Capitol Hill for the first time in 2 years in what's expected to be a fiery hearing led by House Republicans. Ahead of the hearing, a subcommittee has released a transcript of closed-door interviews with Fauci in January, in which he was questioned about whether he knew about former colleagues allegedly skirting public records laws. Today, Dr. Fauci is also expected to face questions about social distancing, masking, and remote schooling, and whether guidance on those issues approved by the CDC director was based on science.
Well, and I'll just tell you, Fauci got flummoxed up on Capitol Hill today, as he deserves. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sarp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Keep that Fauci story in mind, because we're going to unpack that a little further with our next guest. We're going to bring him in right now, former state senator and current candidate for Congress, Dr. Bob Onder, at Bob Onder Mo on Twitter X. Bob, good afternoon. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be back, Tim.
So, Bob, you know what? I don't know that you and I had a chance to fully unpack the just concluded Missouri legislative session. So I thought I'd get the good, the bad, and the ugly out of the way first. I mean, we did get a couple of good things through: defunding Planned Parenthood, anti-ranked choice voting, and citizen-only voting will be on our ballot. But, Bob, the one big thing which became the big ugly was the failure of initiative petition reform for at least the 7th session in a row. And, Bob, I think the true story has come out on this. There was a great story in the Federalist that I saw you retweet, where basically they put the blame where it lies, at the feet of the Rhino Republican establishment, pretty much in your old state Senate. As much as I'm sure as it pains you to admit it, that's really what happened, right?
Well, that's right, Tim. As you know, all session long, an effort was made to demonize the newly formed Freedom Caucus. They are obstructionist. Oh, they filibustered. They are bad people. The legislative session will blow up because of them. But what the Freedom Caucus was doing in every situation where they filibustered, they were doing that to force an unwilling leadership team, especially Caleb Rowden, but even the bill sponsor, to push forward ranked choice voting initiative petition reform to stop this travesty of progressive billionaires from coming to Missouri and putting progressive garbage in our Constitution with the willing cooperation of our court systems and with a whole lot of money. So that was the Freedom Caucus's number one, two, and three priority all session. The only problem is it's hard to push a rope uphill. You need some minimal cooperation for leadership. And unfortunately, it seems to have been Caleb Rowden's number one priority to kill initiative petition reform. And unfortunately, the president of the Senate, the floor leader, and the bill sponsor together have enough power to kill any bill they want. So that's what happened. It was an epic betrayal of the pro-life movement. The failure of initiative petition this session makes it exponentially more likely that we are going to go from a 100% pro-life state to a state that has abortion enshrined in our Constitution, partial birth abortion, no health and safety regs, no parental notification or consent, no restrictions, requirements of informed consent, and probably they'll be going after pregnancy care centers and using this new reproductive right business to guard transgender centers who want to mutilate kids. It is an epic betrayal of all our conservative principles, and they're going to be going after the Second Amendment 2 years from now. Mark my word.
That's exactly right. The article that that Senator Bob and I were just talking about, how Missouri State Senate GOP rhinos made way for leftists to enshrine abortion in Missouri. It's a great article at thefederalist.com. Bob and I have also retweeted it on our Twitter X feeds. Bob, that's a perfect segue to the next subject I want to talk to you about, and that's an update on the race that you are currently running in the 3rd Congressional. Bob, no more important decisions are made now in Missouri than in August, right? Yes, we want everybody to go to the polls in November, but the cake is largely baked in August. The August 6th primary is barely 2 months away. You have an update on the 3rd congressional race that our voters need to know about.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. You know, there are a number of people running for Congress, were a number of people who filed for Congress, including a very great patriot, a great man, a great husband and father who I've gotten to know really well, Brandon Wilkinson. And Brandon Wilkinson, his heart was in running for Congress. But I'd encourage you to have him on your show eventually so he can speak for himself. But, I think he, in so many words, he realized that he wanted to get to a point where there was a strong, viable movement conservative candidate who could beat the establishment swamp and their money and their corruption, as epitomized by my main primary opponent, a guy who used to call himself pro-choice, who called himself moderate, who ran against Josh Hawley. Josh Hawley thankfully beat him 2-1, and then went on to become a lobbyist and lobbied for the COVID tyrants, apropos Dr. Fauci on Capitol Hill this week. So, Brandon, I think he said, look, I ran because if someone else wouldn't be that strong Trump conservative looking out for the people of our state, if there wasn't someone else to do that, he was going to do it. But he said, you know what, if I can support Bob Onder and help him get across the line, that's what I want to do. And I'm really honored to have his support, because I know he has spent a lot of his own personal time. He has a beautiful family, a beautiful young daughter, and he works very hard, works, you know, one of these guys who works 68 hours a week, and yet he was running for Congress in all his spare time. But his heart was in it. But he said, no, for the good of the country, for the good of our state, I'm going to drop out and endorse my friend Bob Onder. I'm really honored.
Well, that is a significant development indeed in the 3rd Congressional. So Brandon Wilkinson making that announcement today and endorsing Bob Onder for the 3rd Congressional. Senator, you mentioned Tony Fauci. We affectionately call him Fauci the Fraud and worse here on our airwaves. He was back up on Capitol Hill today. And, you know, Bob, for a guy that wanted us to accept the fact that he was the science and we were to believe
the science
and we were to believe hook, line, and sinker, everything that he said during those horrible COVID years, horrible not so much for the disease. Yes, it existed. Yes, it was horrible in and of itself, but the government's reaction, courtesy of Tony Fauci, likely made it 1,000 times worse in the U.S. Just look at how they handled things in Sweden. Bob, isn't it amazing how now, just a couple years later, he can't remember anything about nothing when he's testifying on Capitol Hill?
He can't remember a darn thing. You know, at very least, Tim, he could go back and read some of his own papers that he wrote.
Good point.
You know, 2020 wasn't that long ago. He doesn't, you know, unlike our president, I don't think he has dementia.
Mm-hmm.
But he could go back and read his own papers. You know, he's been trying to distance himself from his senior advisor, David Morins, with whom he co-authored 40 papers, one of which was in the journal Cell, a very prestigious journal in 2020, in which he and Dr. Morins advocated, quote, remaking the infrastructure of human existence in order to protect us from COVID. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure I would redo, but I don't want my human existence redone by Dr. Fauci. And the guy proved himself to be, he sounded like a mafia crime boss. I can't recall. I don't remember. I can't recall. But, you know, he did recently admit that he just made up the 6-foot social distancing crap out of whole cloth. You know, he admitted today, I want to listen to the whole thing start to finish, but he admitted that no, the vaccine didn't have a, quote, sustained response and it didn't prevent transmission. Well, Tim, I'm a board certified immunologist. What you call that is a lousy vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a lousy vaccine, and it's not like this data just came out this afternoon, if it's a lousy vaccine, why are you requiring people to get it? But I think he did talk about how for many, many years, he and the NIH and the grants he funded with the NIH were developing this mRNA vaccine technology. Well, he was very personally invested in that. And who knows, we may find out that he was financially invested. There was a Marjorie Taylor Greene today talked about a report that his colleagues made many millions of dollars on various patents and trademarks. So that guy is a liar. He has not had our best interests at heart. Everything he did was to consolidate power and probably wealth for himself and his cronies. And, you know, I think he needs more. We need more than I really think that when we have a new administration, the Justice Department ought to appoint a special prosecutor. And I'm not saying, look, unlike Donald Trump, I think he should be given a fair shake. But I think it's very possible Fauci committed one or more, if not many crimes.
Mm. Well, you may have a thing or two to say about that continued investigation and accountability if you make it to the hallways of Congress next year. Folks, in the meantime, I'd urge you to check out Dr. Bob Onder at Bob Onder Mo, former state senator, practicing physician, candidate for the 3rd Congressional District. Doc, thanks so much for all your time and expertise today. It's always good talking to you. Good luck on the campaign trail.
Hey, Tim, if there's still a special committee on COVID, I am going to ask for that assignment. Thank you so much, Tim.
I love it. Thank you, Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob Onder there at Bob Onder Mo. He's at BobOnderMo.com. We'll be back with further reflections on the ridiculous Banana Republic Trump trial, courtesy of one Todd Showalter. I was so impressed by his email this weekend. All that and more straight ahead, 101.9 94 on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show at News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.